Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
How's it going? Welcome to episode 154 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80 Grit. That's all spelled out. Kevin Hastings is at HastingKevin on the Twitter. We have a great show lined up for you as we finish off our, or we extend, because like last week I said we were finishing off. We're going to extend it one more week, our 2024 preview episode. Today we're going to focus on the picks you can make when you don't need a plan. These are our wild card section of our in-season pod. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Kevin, I'm really looking forward to doing this. We are just about halfway through spring training. A lot of news to talk about. A lot of stuff going on. Still some free agents worth talking about out there in the wild. But we are that much closer to our first Fab season or Fab period of the season. How are you doing?
Doing great. A couple of my leagues are running Fab this weekend because we have games next week.
I was curious. I mean, I asked a long time ago if that's how NFBC was going to do it. They are not. Yahoo, you actually have a choice of skipping those games altogether. So, I mean, my Yahoo league, we will be skipping those games, those Korea games. But it is interesting to see how each platform is handling that series very differently.
Right. Yeah. They're all different. A couple of my leagues, that's a separate week. So yeah. You have set right up with those guys, right? Just the two teams with two games each for that week. Other leagues are adding that to the following week, however your players lock in. Right. And we've talked about NFBC is doing a little different. We get a free look at those first two games. They count as that first week, but your lineup doesn't lock until the 28th. So, yeah, all kinds of different formats. Make sure you're checking that out, how your league is doing it. Make sure you know every little bit you can add, and that those two extra games before the rest of the team start their season can help. It can help us just as much getting a win, a save, a couple strikeouts in March as it can help us in September.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I got one more pick in my TGFBI, for example. I have one more pick there, and I'm very certain I will be choosing at least a Padre or a Dodger with that pick. I don't know what position yet. It doesn't really matter. but it's that free look, right? It's like, yeah, you can fab. That's the beauty of the free look. You can fab them after, and you'll get those stats, but you'll have to pay up for it. At least if you use your 30th round pick, you're not paying up for it. And you can just drop them if it doesn't pan out. So it's nice. All right. But we got a lot of wild card type players to talk about. And I cannot think of a better guest to talk about anything labeled wild card than our very special guest joining us today, Mr. Michael Govier. You know him. You love him. You've seen him everywhere. We talked about the wonderful theme song to the 2024 season. I am dubbing it the actual theme song to the season right now. I'm not sure anything will come out that'll, unless you create it, Michael, that'll come out that'll beat that. But you know him on the Twitter at MJ Govier. You probably know his work over the Palazzo podcast, of course, two L's, two Z's. Before we get to everything else we're going to talk about, Michael, thank you so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
It's great, man. I love doing shows. I love talking fantasy baseball. It's always a good time. Everybody knows that. So when On the Wire calls, you come. And that's what I'm here to do. Talk with Kev and Adam, two solid dudes who know a thing or two about a thing or two.
That's all you can ask for, right? You just need to know a thing or two about just a thing or two. And then you can make it through life.
I will say, I want to thank you for saying those kind words about that song, because I really did put a lot of work into it. So why not stop and say, hey, thanks, man. I really do appreciate that. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Most wonderful time of the year. It's great. It's drafting. It's opening day. It's the buzz of spring training. It's the injuries, which I'm sure we'll talk about on this show. But all of it, just so much the collaborations and the people that make it what it is. And, you know, some people would be like, oh, that sounds kind of cheesy. But it's not. I love it, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
I'm happy you're a part of it too. Like, if we were to lose anybody in this industry and it would be you, we'd all be very different people. And we'd be worse off for it, for sure.
Okay, yeah. Adam. All right.
We'll just get into it then. All right. We do have a lot to talk about from the news section, including, unfortunately, some injury news as Michael talked about. So, Kevin, I'll let you lead it off because we have to have a Royals note somewhere in this. So I'll just lead it off with the Kansas City Royals. Jordan Lyles, he's experiencing some back pain after his start on Tuesday. If this lingers, what do you expect to see out of your Royals rotation come later on in spring training or even opening day?
I believe they're calling it back tightness now. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be too much of a big deal. However, this is an opportunity for the Royals as an organization to give someone else an opportunity if they'd like to here, right? I think they kind of felt obligated to give Jordan Lyles first shot at the fifth spot in their rotation after sending him out there for close to 180 innings of just getting bombed last season, but leaving him out there, right? They just left him out there. Seven innings almost every time he went out there, regardless of what he was giving up. So I think they felt a little obligated, and now maybe they have an opening. He may not be the fifth best pitcher on this roster. Daniel Lynch is showing signs of his old self and what we have seen in the past. I have been excited since last season about Alec Marsh, and we saw him late in the season working as a follower and performing very well. His ERA was close to six for the season, but towards the end of the year, those last few weeks working as a follower, he performed very well, and he's looked really good this spring. So I could see something along those lines happening. I still think they probably give Lyles the first chance. However, there are a couple of guys that will seize the opportunity, and I don't think they're just going to let Lyles run with it if he's not performing well, like they did last season.
Yeah, that was always so painful. almost not every team, but a lot of teams have that guy, right? They just have that guy. Yeah. It's like, you're just keep going. Just, you're going to do it. You're going to take one for the team. And, Lyles was definitely that guy.
That's why I would be so happy for him that every fifth or sixth start, he'd actually have a good outing and the team would score some runs for him. I felt so good for him.
Yeah, just him as a person. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Michael, going over to Washington, Kevin, I feel like we talk about this every week. Washington added another outfielder in some capacity, this time Steady Eddie Rosario. He signs with the Nationals. What kind of impact are you seeing Rosario have on the Nationals outfield and then just also the outfield in general?
Oh, man. Eddie Rosario is a guy that he just sticks with you. He's like that gum that you stepped on that you can't get off, or that piece of toilet paper that might be hanging off the back of your foot. Get off of me. I respect who he is and what he's done. He's had a great career in terms of a guy that I think we thought was maybe done, especially after the stuff with his eyes. That was a big deal, and he overcame that. But bottom line, I never use him in fantasy, and maybe I'm blinding myself to an opportunity because he's shown that he can really be a baller, especially with Atlanta. It was exciting to see what he could do. For the Nationals, he's got an opportunity to sneak in and be an annoying fantasy presence who can make a difference, could be a hitting streamer that maybe multiple weeks were streaming Eddie Rosario. It's very possible. So I'm not interested, but I recognize that he could be a pain in the butt and he could throw a wrench into the situation, which is, you know, it was kind of clear cut. I mean, Victor Robles, you know, he'll get hurt. There's guys here that will get hurt and will fall away. And Eddie Rosario will probably be the last man standing in the end.
Yeah, I mean, they call him Steady Eddie for a reason. He just steadily keeps finding a job. Simple as that. Whether it's full-time or even part-time. And on the surface, you see him with the Nationals and this, you know, you just think instinctively, whoever signs with the Nationals has an opportunity to find themselves in an everyday or close to everyday role. You know, we'll see if injuries keep him at bay or if he can fight off all those other spring training invitees, all those non-roster invitees that they signed to minor league deals. And he can kind of fight that off because I do believe this was also a non-roster invitee deal. So he has no guarantee Roster Resource thinks he'll make the team. Right in the heart of the order. So
Mike Curlin too. Mike Curlin's got him locked in as a platoon, looks like.
Yeah. So they share that in common. As we talked with Mike a couple weeks ago, on the differences obviously between MLB playing time and Roster Resource. There are some, but there are other times where they overlap, and that's kind of confirmation bias. So it's good to check out both of those resources. All right, Kevin, another pitching injury here. Sonny Gray has a mild hamstring strain. He's still going to start. It's possible he'll start the season on the IL. What's the impact on the Cardinals rotation now that he's with his new team in St. Louis?
Not a whole lot. I looked at the Cardinals early season schedule, and they do play a four-game series that first weekend. Many teams don't. They are, and that will mean that they need a fifth starter to start that first full week of the season. But then they have a day off later in the week. They have a day off the following week. They won't need a fifth starter again until the 12th of April. Sounds like they're expecting him back by then. This really looks like it could be a short-term thing. It's a mild hamstring strain. So I don't think they have to do much. We were looking at either Zach Thompson or Matthew Liberatore taking that fifth spot. I think they both get a start over that first weekend into the first full week of the season. And maybe it'll be their one start that they each get in a live regular season MLB game that determines which one sticks around when Gray comes back. But I think it gives them both an opportunity, but not for very long. One, Gray's going to be back fairly quickly. And two, they don't need a fifth starter other than that one time for the first 2.5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, we keep in mind as well, like if the Cardinals want to manipulate this a little bit, they think he's just going to miss the first couple of days of the season, not the first 2 weeks. They could put him on the IL now, right? They could put him on the IL during spring training. That'll carry over 15 days into the regular season, and then he could be ready. Maybe they skip one start that way. So
it'd or be even nice that, if he's ready to go Monday of the first full week, it just, you know, then they don't. He is the fifth starter to start sure. the season, right? And
at least they would have that extra roster spot to play with for the first 4 days if mm-hmm. they were to go that route. Michael, have you been targeting Sonny Gray in any situations? Are you unhappy about this? Are you not? Are you unfazed?
Sonny Gray is right at that tipping point where the best is almost over here. Cardinals could get a decent season out of him. You know, maybe like a 3.8 ERA, a 115, 120 whip, which is solid. You want that stuff. That sounds good. But he's also breaking down, and he broke down several times over the last few years, so I'm out. No Gray, no shares this year. Yeah.
Every time I think about Sonny Gray, I have this article that I read on MLB.com where he did an interview talking about the possibility of actually retiring after last season once he hit his 10-year mark and you get all the pension benefits and all that good stuff. He's like, I could see myself just being done, kind of going the Buster Posey route, meaning like, yeah, I'm good, see you later. Obviously he got the deal with the Cardinals, so obviously he didn't turn that down, didn't come to fruition. But at the same time, that's part of his mental aspect of the game. I mean, he's no Anthony Rendon, but he actually enjoys playing baseball. But you could see him being like, all right, well, you know, I don't have to do this. Let's go, Michael, let's go over to Miami, where manager Skip Shoemaker said that Braxton Garrett probably won't actually make the opening day roster, never mind the rotation. for Miami after being behind, after dealing with some shoulder soreness early in camp. Are you still interested in stashing Garrett for the talent and assuming he will make his way up early on in the season?
That's a toughie, Adam. Yo, Kev, I've really been locked in on this Marlins rotation this year because there's a lot of ceiling in this rotation. You know, Max Meyer's back on the scene, recovered from TJ, and Trevor Rogers missed most of last year. He pitched like 18 innings. Trust me, I know. I got that pinned down to the inning, I'm pretty sure, because I drafted Trevor Rogers everywhere last year. That and Eric Lauer were like, I drafted both those. They weren't like major risks. I got them later in drafts, but Eric Lauer, gosh, where is he now? I hope he's okay. I'd love to see him back in baseball. Bottom line here, fellas, is the Marlins have some options here. So if Garrett's falling out here, he could fall behind. And that really could be the case. So I'm saying no. I don't think I want to draft Garrett. I could see why you'd want to have him on your roster to wait it out to see if he gets back in the mix. But I think Max Meyer is a real factor here. And with AJ Puck being stretched out as a starter, I do see a scenario. I actually wrote about this the other day on my Patreon, blah, 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 MJ Govier. And I was talking about how Puck and Meyer combined, because Puck hasn't been stretched out enough, if he could give them 100 innings, 110 innings pitch max, and then Meyer could fill the other void, I don't know how they would, you know, combine the two and how that would work out through the logic of a rotation in a season. But I think Garrett's going to be like, hey, what about me? And a shoulder is not something that's just going to get better and it's all going to be good. That definitely makes me nervous. I'm staying away from Garrett. I loved Braxton Garrett last year, but I'm switching gears.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it all the time. Shoulders can be more troublesome than elbows when it comes to pitchers, especially if it's your throwing shoulder for obvious mm-hmm. reasons. Eric Lauer, minor league deal with the Pirates. And, you know, that just happened a couple, like 2 days ago. So he's still there. He's still in the mix. Unfortunately, yes. You know, he may be fighting off the likes of like Jared Jones or Rosie Contreras or somebody else for that fifth spot if the Pirates want to do some manipulation. But Eric Lauer, still available, Michael, if you got drafts going on.
I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for you, Eric Lauer. Get it done.
Better on the Pirates than probably on your actual fantasy teams. But he'll, you know, it's good, still good to root for him. Kevin Moore, pitching injury. Oh, I didn't realize I did this on purpose to you, but three pitching injury notes for you to lead off with the news section. Justin Verlander, he's going to start the season on the IL, according to the Astros. Who takes his place in the Houston rotation, at least to start the season? And are you just staying away from Verlander altogether based on his history and what we're seeing right now?
I'm not drafting Verlander. I do have him on a couple of dynasty teams where I'm not going to get anything for him either. So I'm going to take every last thing I can get out of him. But if you have drafted Verlander, I'm not too worried about this. And if he drops in drafts, I may pick up another share or two in some fab leagues. I don't think he's going to be out long. And it's a little different in Houston. However, they can skip a fifth starter one time, not twice like St. Louis can, but Houston can skip him one time. And then he may be about ready to come back. Both Mike Kierlin and Jason Martinez have JP France now as the fifth starter in Houston. I don't have any better insight than that. That's where I think they'll go. And in deep leagues, it may be somebody you want to grab late. But when Verlander comes back, he may be out of a starting job for a little while. He'll work his way back in at some point during the season. All teams use more than five starters. We know that. But for now, it looks like JP France will get at least one run through the rotation, maybe a couple more, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I target in my most recent drafts, Jose Urquidy is somebody that I've been locking on a little bit more so than I was early on, because maybe he already had that fourth starting position. Bump him up to the third spot. Now he's like right in the thick of it for the Houston Astros. So the JP France locking into that spot makes a lot of sense.
Real quick, don't forget, Ronel Blanco is an interesting name. Take a look. He's been around, but he did start several games for Houston last year and was decent. And he's had some good outings in spring so far. Just someone to put in the back of your mind, Ronel Blanco.
Yeah, he fits the wild card factor that we're talking about the rest of the episode. So good call out there.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today, we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right. I'll give the other pitching injury note to OVA here. Lucas Giolito, he could miss, probably will miss, the entire 2024 season. And this is an elbow thing, not a shoulder thing. So my question, though, is not about, obviously, Giolito's off your board, but how are you attacking the Red Sox rotation? Are you assuming that Garrett Whitlock and Trevor Houck both have the 4 or 5 spot? Or are you assuming that the Red Sox will make another move, a.k.a. sign one Snell or Montgomery, since they are still available out there? And obviously all the rumors about Jordan Montgomery signing with the Red Sox all offseason because his wife is doing a residency at a Boston hospital. They already live there, the Montgomerys do. So that's, in my opinion, that's why all these rumors have been kind of pushing him to the Red Sox. I don't know how much validity there actually is in the fact that he's actually interested in signing, or the Red Sox are in signing and people are just kind of wish casting because of the fact of proximity. But how are you attacking the Red Sox rotation?
I think you just said it, Adam. I think a lot of people are, hey, I'll tweet this. And then 500 other people tweet it. Next thing you know, Montgomery and Snell on their way to Boston. Ship it up to Boston. Great song. Ship it out to Boston? No, ship it up, I think. Who cares?
Yeah, up. It's
point
up.
Being,
yeah.
Okay, thank you. Dropkick Murphys. In the end, this is odd that you had me labeled for these, for the Marlins and the Red Sox rotations, because that naturally happened. And I'm really fascinated by both rotations because I love Tanner Houck. I really do. And I, not only am I saying this to you verbally, guys, I'm also putting my money where my mouth is. I drafted Houck yesterday in TGFBI. I think it was around pick 290-ish. I was like, I want Houck now. Yeah. I believe in Houck more than I believe in Whitlock. And Whitlock, I'm a little more uncertain that he can stay healthy, although, you know, it's not that big of a difference, but Houck is a first rounder, drafted in the first round a few years ago, and he's getting better and better, and he's got a strikeout potential that's really, really close to busting loose. It's just a matter of him being allowed to consistently throw as a starter all season long, ramp up those innings, give him the look that he deserves. I love Houck, and I'm locked in on Houck. I really am.
And remember, I mean, these are two guys that are completely opposite in that respect, that Houck was a first round pick and Garrett Whitlock was a Rule 5 pick. So, yeah. Like, these are very different. They come from very different, like, pedigree. If you're
Yankees, Rule 5 too.
That doesn't hurt. As a Red Sox fan, I'm not mad about that. No. Kevin, I finally give you a non-pitcher, non-injury related note here. It's not any better, but it is not injury related. Noel V. Marte will be missing at least the first 80 games of the 2024 season as he was busted for performance-enhancing drugs. And I cannot pronounce this word, so I'm not going to try. You can try if you like, but it doesn't matter. He's not playing for 80 days. Are you more so relieved that you have to worry less about the middle infield or the infield in general in Cincinnati and how that's going to iron itself out? Or are you more upset that maybe you have Marte on a few teams and, you know, now you're going to have to, you know what your first drop is going to be in your first fat period?
I tweeted this out earlier today, Adam. I went running to my teams because I knew I'd drafted him, but I couldn't remember how often and I couldn't remember where. I do have him on two teams. Fortunately, I think for me, I'm okay on both teams. One, I have a player that's going to benefit from this directly. And that is CES, Christian Encarnacion Strand, right? Because I believe Candelario is moving to third base now. Strand, Encarnacion Strand, first base. So as you alluded to, this is clearing up a little bit of the infield for Cincinnati that's been overcrowded all offseason. We've been waiting for them to move somebody. Well, Marte moved himself.
Not like this. So, not like this.
Right. Yeah. Marte moved himself for at least half of the year. I looked at their schedule. That takes them right up to the end of June, about 10 days before the All-Star break. On the flip side, if you have drafted Marte, in most cases he's a drop. In most formats, I believe. However, he in some leagues he might be my last one. You know, kind of just leave him there until I have to have a spot, and sure I'll let him go. Because the good thing about a suspension is we know when it ends. Right now, we don't know for sure they're going to throw him right back on the major league roster, because that was a question throughout the offseason as well. However, we do know when he'll be eligible to come back, an exact date. So that does make it a little easier, even though it's 3 months into the season. Like I said, in most leagues, I'm dropping him. But in some, if I can stash him, I might try at least for a little while, knowing I probably won't still have him when he comes back, but he might be my last drop to early in the season anyway. But yeah, it does clear some things up, I believe. And mainly, I think it's going to move Candelario over to third base, and we're going to see Christian Encarnacion Strand at first base on more of a regular basis. They still do like throwing, or there's the possibility, I guess, we've heard throughout the off season that they do like India at first base, maybe to get him a little bit of playing time sometimes, at least versus right-handed pitching. But in general, early in draft season, I was drafting a lot of CES, and then I backed off because I was starting to get a little worried about playing time, and this kind of shores that up. So my running to check all my teams where I had Nuelve Marte and seeing what I was going to have to do with those turned into checking out the teams where I have CES and going, oh, now I'm in a little better shape here.
There you go.
That's what I think is going to happen.
I think your point about knowing when a suspension ends is really prudent when it comes to our show as we talk about Fab. And I think we're going to start bringing up Marte's name in early June, you know, a couple weeks prior to that suspension ending. And you'll inevitably still be on many, many, many free agent markets. Michael, have you drafted Marte anywhere, or are you, you know, kind of free and clear?
I'm a fortunate soul. No Marte. I did look at him a few times, but I was waiting, and he would go early. So people took that plunge. And I'll tell you right now, this could be a lost season flat out for Marte. A lost season all the way. Yes, he'll be back after half the season. But this is a competing team in the Reds, right? They want to get in the playoffs, and they can. And they got a bunch of people here who are ready to go. So he could get lost in the shuffle this year. And it could be a lost cause for Marte 2024. I'm very much aware of that possibility.
Yeah, Marte, still plenty of options as well. So there's no guarantee that when he's back, as you mm-hmm. guys both have mentioned. All right, well, we'll move on to somebody who obviously is back and finding another position to call his own. Dave Roberts of the Dodgers said that Mookie Betts' move to shortstop is probably permanent. I'll use a paraphrase on there, where Gavin Lux not cutting it at the shortstop position, going to be playing all the rest of his reps in spring training at second base. Mookie Betts moving over to shortstop. If you play Yahoo, he already has shortstop eligibility, but if he sticks at shortstop going into the season, he'll gain it real quick on every other format imaginable. How much more valuable can Mookie be And does this actually provide him, you know, does this put him in the conversation of like, you know, if you're still drafting, are we going to start seeing that added flexibility in position, moving him into the conversation of, you know, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, like he already is in there. So I don't even know what I'm asking here. What's your take on like, what's your take on this, Michael?
Well, we talked about it earlier today at Palazzo because we were live. A lot of this news broke, the Marte and the Bet stuff. Mm-hmm. And we, I said that I was concerned because if Mookie has to play a great chunk of shortstop this year, it's a demanding position. It is shortstop. It's like the position on the field, you know, being a catcher, being a shortstop, that's where it's at. And, you know, it's not too long ago that he had hip issues. Obviously he recovered. He had a great year last year. So in terms of him being a top five guy, if he can get shortstop eligibility, that's great. But if he can stay away from not having to be the regular everyday shortstop, we're talking like 120 games at short or something. I do slightly worry about that. I really do. Like, that's something to be aware of. And in the end, I don't know how much more adding shortstop to Mookie Betts' profile bumps him up to like number two. You taking him over Bobby Witt now because Bobby Witt has that. You know, does that matter to you? In the end, if you liked Mookie Betts, you know, he's going to be a short. Doesn't mean he's going to run anymore either, right? So there's things that might not add value to him from a fantasy perspective for Betts, but it could hurt him from a fantasy perspective if he gets a little bit more beat up. And the Dodgers are built for the World Series, so why would they want to grind one of their best players away? It's not like Mookie Betts is an old man on his deathbed. I'm not saying that, but it certainly is something I'm going to be aware of.
I think that if nothing else, I drafted Mookie Betts in a couple places already, and there's been plenty of times where I drafted him in my mind, he's my starting second baseman. And by the time halfway through my draft got through, I ended up moving him into my outfield because there were more second base options that I was happy with or I liked drafting. Shortstop, I'm not sure I feel the same way about shortstop as I do second base later in the draft. I feel like there's a bigger cliff after the first, you know, the first three rounds worth of players. Kevin, I mean, he's not gaining corner eligibility. He's still middle. I mean, you're not moving Mookie Betts into your middle infield anyway. Does this hurt Betts' value because of what Michael's talking about with injury concerns or add or default?
I think the Dodgers will monitor that, but it would be a concern if they don't. Then I would agree with Mike for sure. But they shuffle guys around, even their superstars, yeah. Right? And so I wouldn't. I'm not really thinking about this at all. As far as drafting Mookie Betts now, but in season, July, August, things start happening to our teams, then it could really help. So it's not something I'm really paying much attention to at all right now. I don't think it bumps his value up much at all in the immediate term. I don't think it hurts him, but it could become very advantageous later in the season when you realize, oh, you had a couple of injuries. There's an extra spot I can move Mookie Betts around to. Gives you a bigger player pool to go looking for fab targets in.
Sure. I mean, I will say it's got to give him some kind of a bump in like a NFBC best ball / cut line type of situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where he has the extra eligibility. I picked him in 102 at 102 in my Raz Slam just for the dual eligibility. So I'm not upset about the possibility of a third eligibility in that format. All right. Two more things here, Kevin. We'll go to Texas, who has already had some injury notes in their lineup, and now they add to it with Nathaniel Lowe with having an oblique strain. He now has the possibility of missing opening day. How do you expect the Rangers to deal with the possibility of Seager, Josh Young, and Nathaniel Lowe in jeopardy of missing opening day? Is there somebody out there that's going to take the brunt of that opportunity and possibly run with it?
Well, first of all, just because he can move around and play just about anywhere, Ezekiel Duran is probably in for more playing time to start the season than most projections are giving him credit for. And we're going to talk more about that later in the show. But Mike was here a couple of weeks ago, Mike Kierland. Both Mike Kierland and Jason Martinez now have Foscue as the starting first baseman for the Texas Rangers. And Wyatt Langford in the lineup. Now there's room for both of these guys, right? Mike was talking about, he was kind of pumping the brakes with the Rangers are saying everything we want to hear about Lankford. He's skyrocketing up draft boards. And Mike pumped the brakes a little bit and said, what about Foscue? Well, now we're probably going to see them both on opening day.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty happy to see that. I grabbed, he was my 29th round pick. Justin Foscue was in TGFBI just because, you know, we didn't talk about it, but, you know, Vladimir Jr. has a, you know, a hurt thumb. He probably won't miss a whole lot of time, if any. But at the same time, I didn't have a backup first baseman. Foscue won't have it going into the season, but it'll be nice if he gets that right away. And then he'll have dual corner and middle infield eligibility if he can hold that job. That's my question, is whether or not after the all these, you know, the three big names come back and they're in the rotation, they're set, can Justin Foscue specifically do enough to kind of hold on to some type of role to be valuable? Is Justin Foscue somebody that you have been targeting or you're excited to see play, Michael, or anybody else?
Justin Foscue. Hey, good times, noodle salad. I haven't targeted him. I am curious about him, but he's not cut it yet. But that's really because I haven't done a ton of drafts either, and he would be deeper. Anyways, Foscue's an intriguing target. The Wyatt Lankford thing is blowing my mind. I really don't think he's going to be on the opening day roster, but seems like everybody wants it to happen and he's trying to make it happen and he's got all the talent in the world. I feel like they want to hold on to him, but in the day we live in now with these draft pick options and more opportunities, if they can finish in the top part of the rookie of the year voting, it makes a difference. So yeah, I guess I'm Ezekiel Duran forever. So whatever happens, this is all good news for Ezekiel Duran. He's going to always fight his way into the lineup. And when one guy's off to the side like Nathaniel Lowe is, just good news for him, even if he's not playing first directly.
Yeah, and Duran already has the triple eligibility pretty much everywhere, including NFBC rosters. So if he gets time at first base as well, great. You know, icing on the cake in that sense. As a reminder, those rookie of the year extra draft pick only goes to the player that wins. The players that come in second or third, the teams get nothing, but the players actually get, I think it's second and third, they get an extra added year of eligibility, or they get a year of eligibility knocked off their sentence, if you will. So there's a lot in it for the top three players, not a lot in it for the teams unless they win. So if the Rangers believe Lankford can win that, they will start him. If they're at all questioning that fact, they don't have a lot pushing them to do so, except for all these injuries. So there's that. All right, Michael, let's end on the happiest of happy notes here. Talked a lot about injuries. We talked about a PED suspension. Welcome back, Joey Votto, to baseball after that great meme he put out there, the sad Keanu meme. He did a great job with that. And now he is playing in Canada, at least, well, not right now. They're down in Florida but for spring training. But he signed a non-roster invitee contract with the Toronto Blue Jays. How happy does this make you in general? And then do you think he makes it, like, does he make the team?
I am just recently a permanent resident of the beautiful country of Canada. So now that I'm not a citizen, but I'm a permanent resident. So I've got more say now. And I love that Joey Votto is back in his homeland where he belongs. I hate to see Joey Votto's career just end suddenly. I know it can happen to everybody, even the best. It's just over. But I don't think it's totally over. And what I really took from the Votto thing is that maybe this Vladdy thing is more serious than we know. We'll always be the last to know on this. It's kind of a logical junction, though. Hey, Vladdy's got hurt a little bit. Votto's in camp. They got Dan Vogelbench is my buddy at Palazzo, Robbie Baseball likes to say. But he's just really like strictly a DH. So, and they got Spencer Horwitz. So Votto, how does he get on this team? There has to be an injury that sticks. That means someone's on the IL to start the year, and that would require Votto's services. And they could also use maybe his veteran presence on a young team that still hasn't found a way to win in the playoffs. He could help in that way. So I hope he makes the team. I'd love to see it happen. Right now, it's 50-50 for me, unless it's the Vlad issue, which to me, if it's the Vlad issue and the injury, then it's 100% Votto will make this team out of spring. That is, I can lock that in. Absolutely.
I just can't imagine they can't possibly be the Blue Jays. They can't possibly be using this as a marketing ploy to sell tickets for the first home series, at least.
No,
I mean, I would. That should be a reason that they keep him on. He makes the team. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Whatever the case is, I don't care. I just want him to make the team. So whether it's an injury reason or a marketing ploy, as long as Joey Votto is in baseball, specifically in Canada, I'm personally all about it. Kevin, do you have any chance that you're drafting Joey Votto in your 30th round, just, you know, for funsies?
No, but I do have a DC going.
There we go. Okay, there we go. The option is on the table. All right, left news and notes for this week. I want to thank everybody who's watching at home, and we are going to keep going here. We're going to talk about the wild card kind of picks that we could be making in our 2024 drafts. You, of course, are still listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined by Kevin Hastings. And we are very lucky to be joined by Michael Gauvier. Michael, in the middle of the show, I like to do this. Please remind everybody who you are, as if they don't know, what you do, and where you do it.
There's always somebody out there who doesn't know you. So if you've never met me before, I'm Michael Gauvier. It's nice to know you. Palazzo Podcast, 2 L's, 2 Z's. That's how you can find me. That's on Twitter. It's everywhere. The YouTube, our Discord. You know, I got a Patreon, MJ Gauvier, patreon.com/MJ Gauvier. Fantasy baseball is what I do. But I also do shows like Cinema 9 Podcast, which is a lot of fun. I love movies. So if you love film, check that out. Is It Safe? That's a talk show I do with some friends talking about life. And First Day Pod with my lovely wife, Leanne. I'm all over the place being annoying and loud and generally overbearing. But in the end, my heart's in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're both in Glarf. And
yeah,
so last 2 years, last 3 years, I drafted live in Chicago. You could not make it because of an ice storm. This year, draft happens in Cleveland. You're making it there, and I couldn't make it this year. So we are just ships in the night. We have not been able to this experience for me personally is what I'm saying is lovely. Because we have not had the proper privilege of, you know, meeting in person. So anytime I can get like some face-to-face time with you is a wonderful thing. So
I agree, thank you, Adam, so much. Thank you for having me here too. We missed you. It was great to be in Cleveland. It was a really weird hostel building, but it made it even cooler. And thanks to Dave and Jake, the guys who hosted it, and everybody at Glarf. I love Glarf, Great Lakes Area Riddle Fantasy League, part of Earth, which if you listen to the show and watch the show, you're well aware of what Earth is most likely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right. Let's talk about the wild card players that you can pick. I kind of alluded to at the beginning of the show. These are the type of players that you can make picks when you don't need a plan. Like when your rosters are good to go at the end of your draft, you're like, you know what? I can just throw some darts, whatever. I'm not low on runs. I'm not low on strikeouts, whatever the case may be. And there's some stashes you can make in the middle of drafts as well. So Kevin, let's talk about that. Let's talk about those wild card picks that you make like in the middle of drafts, or maybe you don't. How early is too early to draft the quote obvious stashes? Like right now, we talked about Wyatt Langford. We've talked about Jackson Holliday in the past. At one point, Jackson Churio was a stash, maybe not a stash right now because he has that contract. But there are those players out there. Jordan Walker was that player last year. Bobby Witt Jr. was that player the year before. There are those, quote, obvious stashes. How much risk are you willing to take on those, quote, obvious stashes that fit into this wild card mold that we're talking about?
I think earlier in drafts than I used to be. And this doesn't have anything to do with how all the minor league players we saw come up so early last year. We saw a lot of prospects, some opening day, and those that we didn't see opening day, we saw some really quickly right after the season began. But it has more to do with the fact that, you know, this is becoming more of a topic of conversation on other podcasts as well. Any pick in the entire second half of your draft is highly unlikely to be on your roster at the end of the season, right? We're talking like 15 out of the 30 players you draft in our standard NFBC Fab Leagues, both 12-team and 15-team leagues. This seems to be the trend. Mm-hmm. You're going to end up with half or less. So why not start taking a chance on some of the guys that you really believe in, that you really have a reason you think are going to be up, if not opening day, very quickly, or somebody that there's a perception that they're injured and you think, no, I think they're fine and they're going to be back in 2 weeks. There's a good chance you'd be cutting whoever you draft in that spot anyway at some point, even early in drafts, you know, 15, 16 round. I'm coming around to it. It's fine to start looking at those players at that point.
Yeah, Mike, has the influx of those, you know, those rookie that Kevin was talking about, those rookie players coming up early, a lot of them pitchers last year, specifically, you know, Tanner Beebe, Andrew Abbott, a couple other guys, obviously, Gavin Williams, coming up not out of the blue per se, but maybe earlier than maybe we would have expected. Obviously, a lot of the hitters like Jordan Walker making the opening day roster. Is that trend influenced your drafting of said stashes or prospects?
Not really. I try to stay the course on what I plan to do. I'm aware that the shiny new toys, prospects, rookies on the come can be so tantalizing. I mean, right, Kev? I mean, how many times there's a guy like, oh, I want to draft this guy so bad, but resist. Resist. Don't commit. Be patient. You know, a lot of leagues are won by these guys that are boring, like a Brandon Belt type, right? Who doesn't have a job still, right? Which is crazy. But that's my point. I'll wait and be patient. I haven't changed too much unless a guy really wows me. I will say last year, Spencer Steer was a guy I was all over. I drafted him heavily. I loved him. And he was not established at all with Cincinnati. Spencer Steer now is not Spencer Steer a year ago from this point. So I always keep an eye on a guy. And when he impresses like Spencer Steer did, that will give me a lot more comfort. It's about not just talent, it's about opportunity as well. And Spencer Steer had an opportunity last year to play in the Reds lineup, and he took advantage of it.
Yeah, Spencer Steer, my $10 bet for NL Rookie of the Year last year, only due to the fact that I knew he was going to be playing every single day. He could volume his way into the conversation. Obviously, it didn't happen. Corbin Carroll exists and all that good stuff. But the logic, I thought, was, you know, solid. You know, he was like, you know, at least 10th on the list of on the prop bet. So I thought it was, you know, worth $10. And it was, just to follow along all season. So you kind of alluded, both of you guys kind of touched on this, the fact that, you know, these you stay in the course because a lot of these leagues, Michael, as you said, are won by these boring guys. Brandon Belt's not signed. Adam Duvall's not signed. These kind of guys that are still out there. These are the guys that can win you typically in your deeper leagues, your draft and holds, your 15, 20 teamers and what have you. So Kevin, like, do you have a different, do you find yourself with a different strategy when it comes to format? Where if you have a 10 or 12 team league versus a 15, 20 team league, fab versus draft and hold, do you value these guys differently in those, or is it, you know, I'm going to stay, like, as Michael said, like, stay that course based on your valuation regardless?
No, the format absolutely has something to do with it, or quite a bit to do with it, actually. We talked earlier in the offseason about in draft and holds needing reinforcements, right? So if there's somebody that you might really think they're going to be up nice and early, but you're not sure, Well, a draft and a hold's a perfect spot to draft somebody like that later in the draft, because you're going to have injuries and you're not going to be able to pick anybody up. You're not going to be able to go pick up that guy that if he doesn't get drafted. So in a draft and hold, yeah, you got to be careful. You don't want too many of them, or that early in the season when they're all still at AAA, you can't fill your lineup, rather than late in the season when people are injured, you can't fill your lineup. You're just flip-flopping it. But so you can't have too many of them, but in a draft and holds, I'm much more likely to make that move. And then the whole 12 team to 15 team league thing. I know that we go shallower than 12, we go deeper than 15, but that's kind of really the breaking point, I think, for a lot of things. And it's a double-edged sword, right? And it's in the shallower the league, the better the replacement value. Also, the shallower the league, the more elite players you need in your lineup, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. 15-team league, it might seem like a better idea to stash this guy. He's going to be better than some of the players getting drafted in the 29th, 30th round when we see them, whether it's injury, whether it's prospect. Once we see them, they're better than these players being drafted in the final rounds. But what are you doing to replace that player while you're waiting on that stash in a 15-team league where there's not as many players out there available in the player pool, or at least in the that are going to perform the way we would like to see them perform? So it's kind of a double-edged sword when you're talking the size of the league, format of the league absolutely matters. And I'm going to say the words, Adam. It's a case-by-case, team-by-team basis.
There it is. We got our quota. We got the quota in for the episode.
Good job, Kev.
I mean, the other thing that I don't think you really touched on, if you didn't, I missed it. I'm sorry. But, like, is not only format, but you have the stashes aren't just prospects. Stashes are injured players as well. And so depending on how many IL slots you have in your league, that plays a big role. Michael, like, NFBC, as we say it all the time, there are no IL spots. You have leagues that are on Yahoo that you can have up to 10 IL spots. You have leagues that have infinite IL spots. So this obviously plays a role when it comes to injured players. But like, how long, assuming you have a very minimal amount of IL spots, like how long are you willing to be attached to players with injury versus players that are just prospect stashes, or just players that don't have an opportunity now you're hoping will move into it? And we'll talk about some of those later on in the pod. But how long are you allowing yourself to kind of hold on to the idea of these stashes versus actually needing to see some production?
There's a great lesson I took a couple years ago. Chris Sale. This was 2022, I believe. Or Chris Sale and Tatis were long-term stashes. People are like, oh, but when should I draft these guys? Because when they come back, they're going to be money. You guys remember what happened to Chris Sale when he came back? Anybody?
Absolutely nothing.
Kev?
He punched the TV, right? Was it that year?
Oh, did he throw the bike off the... Yeah.
Well, it was that year. He was rehabbing at Worcester. You're right, Kev. But he came back and he got hit in the arm by a line drive from a Yankees hitter, and it was over that quick.
Hold on.
That was his Chris Sale's 2022. What a great experience that was. So I am not a fan of stashing guys if I don't have IL spots. Now, I play on Yahoo. I got a home league. We got 3 IL spots. I maximize those always. In fact, when the draft is done in that head-to-head Cats 14-team home league, shout out BYB, I immediately go to the wire, on the wire,
there it
and
is.
I'm adding 3 stashes that I can sit in those 3 IL spots, and they will pay off later. And I love doing that. And sometimes there's so many, it's like, I can't do them all. We got Robbie Ray, Max Scherzer, now even Noel Vemarte, though I'm not stashing him now. But there's a lot of guys we can stash. And when it's a pitcher, that is a little bit more risky because they're usually coming back from an injury that could cause a recurring situation to happen again. So I think I'd rather stash hitters over pitchers, but I will do so only 5 IL spots. I'm not going to hold places where there's no IL spots. I'm not going to waste a bench spot on a guy who cannot produce for me now. That's a habit I got out of, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, Noel Vey, obviously.
Great point, Michael.
Not somebody you can put in an IL spot.
Great point on the right after the draft, filling up your IL spots. I've played in several leagues over the years where you're not allowed to pick up a player who is on the IL. But right after your draft, before the season starts, most teams aren't putting players on the IL yet. So there's that little wrinkle. You pick them up right away and then throw them on your IL as soon as they are placed on the IL by their team.
There's a lot of different ways you can manipulate the different ways in which you can stash a player. You know, we talked about IL. We talked about prospects. We talked about a little bit, and we'll talk about it now. You know, the idea that players have skills but not necessarily a set role, whether it be a pitcher in waiting for a rotation spot or the, you know, closer opportunity, or a hitter like Ezekiel Duran that we talked about, who, you know, could have an opportunity if a lot of things could happen. So let's talk about some of those players. And we've already mentioned his name a bunch of times. Yes, Ezekiel Duran will probably come up again. But so we're playing a little game, not a game. We're not playing Ask. We're going to talk about different types of wild card picks that you can take late in your draft. So the rules of this game were very simple. The player has to have an ADP of 300 or higher in the online championships that have happened this year. I believe there's 74, 75 of those drafts that have been completed so far. So large sample size here. And I've broken down into four different categories. We'll go category by category. You guys can pick any type of player that fits the category. First one we're going to start off with is rookie stash. These are players that have not been guaranteed a spot on the opening day roster and should have rookie eligibility. I don't think I wrote that, but I think it's kind of common sense based on the title of the category. Michael, I want you to start this one off for me. Again, 28th, 29th round pick, should have an ADP over 300, should be a rookie who we are not 100% sure. Sure, you could go to Roster Resource. You can go to MLB Playing Time and check their pages and see if what they're suggesting. But there's no guarantee, no guarantee by a manager, by the team. They haven't been, you know, placed on the full roster. Who might you be targeting that kind of fits that category?
I'm wondering if this cuts it. I think it does. Does Davis Schneider count?
Did he have rookie eligibility? Did he play enough last year? Kevin, you can talk about him.
Quite, but he's close enough. Yeah.
We'll count it.
Well, yeah. I was looking at his at bats last year. He had 116. He kind of got dissed. You know, yeah, he had he did crack 141 plate appearances last year, so that's over the rookie limit. Or is it at bats? I always mix it up.
I'm pretty sure it's at bats. I think
it's at bats. So he's
So it is 116. So I'm right. Yes. Cool. So he had 116 at bats last year. He's still rookie eligible. I know we talked about Joey Votto's in Toronto's house now, and they got all these other ancillary parts they've brought aboard. But I love David Schneider's game, especially in OBP leagues. He's an OBP machine, and this is a team with a full stacked lineup that will produce plenty of offense. It's just a matter of, do they trust him enough to let him play consistently? Because last year, for those that remember, if you had David Schneider, he came out tearing it up. He had like 3 home runs in 4 games in August. It was like, whoa, David Schneider, this guy's a revelation. And then they started sitting him more and more and more, and he didn't play as much. So that's the only thing that has held his ADP back, in my opinion. I think if he had gotten to play more consistently, everybody would be like, oh, this guy's the real deal. I would love to have David Schneider as my second baseman. So I'm all about David Schneider this year, and I really just hope that the playing time could be consistent enough to make it worth my while.
Yeah, to confirm, I always confirm this with Baseball Reference. On their player pages, they list if they have rookie eligibility through the course of the season. They do list him as being rookie eligible through 2024. So, ding, ding, ding. You win the category in the fact that you stayed in the lane and you got the rules right. Kevin, same scenario. Rookie stash here, past ADP of 300. Who are you picking in that scenario, last two picks of a 12-team draft?
I love David Schneider. Love that call, Michael. I'm going with Jackson Merrill here, and this may be becoming more and more apparent, but I still don't think of it as guaranteed that he'll make this team, but it really started to look like he really could be the center starting opening day center fielder. I'm willing to take that chance. A guy that projects to be about a 15-15 guy in a full season. For me, it's really the runs and RBIs that he can contribute. He is 20 years old. He will not turn 21 until a couple of weeks into the season after opening day. So this is by no means a guarantee, A, that he'll make the team, and B, that it'll hit the ground running. But sometimes I think that, you know, some of these guys, not all of them, but some of them, when they're this young, they're just so young that they don't even realize they should be feeling some pressure. And they're not really trying to get out, pressing. That's the word I was looking for. They're not pressing. So maybe he just hits the ground running. I remember 2 years ago in Arizona, Michael, he was a pretty big topic of conversation because he was in the Arizona Fall League that year. There were other players. Jordan Walker was there. But the comments were the best athlete in the league that year was Jackson Merrill. So he's worth a shot.
I remember that. Yeah. A lot of talk. I saw him live play too. I was impressed. I actually was more impressed by Heston Kjerstad that year, but still, it doesn't mean Merrill's not awesome. He is. Good call.
Yeah, Merrill. And also one of those players that you'll get a free look at if he does make that team. So some, added bonus, added bonus.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right, let's move on from the rookies specifically on to hitters that this is the skills over role. Guys who you think have the skills to play, but they don't have a set role per se on their team. Possibly you hope or think that they will move, either their skills will bump them into more playing time or into a more solid role, or maybe they, get lucky and some other reason knocks them into more playing time. Kevin, go ahead and, let the cat out of the bag here, as we've already talked about him a bunch, but who are you looking at for this category?
Well, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but the Texas Rangers have this utility player by the name of Ezekiel Duran.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. It really looks like, one, I believe he's going to get more playing time than he's being projected for anyway, because of all the places he can play, because of the people already in those positions, right? That, is it really surprising that we're wondering if Corey Seager's playing opening day? Is it surprising we're wondering if Josh Young's going to be available on opening day? No. So I like Duran more anyway. And it's really intriguing to me that, some of these projections have him barely breaking 300 plate appearances on the season. I was already in the belief that he's going to get 500 plate appearances this season. Now, he may get even more with some of these injuries, depending on how long they last, and then who knows what happens the rest of the season. Here's my biggest argument is, for some reason, everybody, including Mike Curlin, including Jason Martinez, it really looks, all of the projections are him as a small side platoon guy, and I don't get that. He only has 650 major league plate appearances. It takes about 1,000 plate appearances, both sides of the plate, to start looking at splits, but he hasn't had any. I think I can take more, put more stock in that than I can if I'm trying to make the point that he does have a platoon split. He hasn't had platoon splits for his career or in the 439 plate appearances he had in 2023. So I think Ezekiel Durant fits this spot perfectly. I think we're looking at least 500 plate appearances on the season rather than the 300 he's being. I mean, Steamer only has him for 233.
But,
you know, the bat, ATC, both have him for 303. So, yeah, I'm looking at 500 plus. So he's perfect for this category.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you basically, seriously, you stole this guy. This was a guy I would have written down. I'm not kidding. I drafted Duran in TGFBI yesterday. I love him. I loved him in 2022. I remember I picked him up in a main event for the first time. And I was like, oh, this guy's interesting. And he doesn't walk as much. Usually I like guys who can walk and have a better batter's eye, a little bit more patient. But that's okay because he's so flexible in terms of his positional availability. And the guy, he hits. He makes good, consistent contact. Solid batting average. Not elite, but he's just the kind of guy that you can't get rid of. And he's continuing to get better, too. Like, he's still young. You know, he came over from the Yankees, I believe, right, in a trade a couple years ago. And he continues to develop. That was a great move. I love it, Kev. I love Ezekiel Durant so much. You read my mind.
All right, so you couldn't talk about, well, you can talk about Ezekiel Durant, but you had to pick another player, Michael, for the skills over rules section, hitter specifically. Who fits the bill for you besides Ezekiel Durant?
Fair. I really labored over this one because I found myself being glommed onto a team for like one team specifically for a couple of these categories. And I want to make sure I branch out and stay true to the game, if you will. So, you know, I wanted to say Jose Miranda is a guy that is making progress this spring. He's looking better. He had some injury challenges that were a real nightmare. And Alex Kirilloff, I don't trust Alex Kirilloff. I trust Miranda more. And some people might think that's a toss-up. You could go either way. And that's fine. But I really like Miranda this season, and he's free. Like, nobody's thinking about him. He's an afterthought. Even if he doesn't make the roster right out of spring, I might still draft him depending on the format, as Kev mentioned earlier, which is always important. I really might. I know this guy's still got game, and that lineup's going to be stacked, and he can hit for power. And if he's healthy, you know, this is a corner infielder that can be a very useful part of a 15-teamer and maybe even a 12-teamer if we stay true to the game. Real quickly, if it's not him, then I would also consider Jared Triolo, who I really like. Had 200 solid plate appearances last year late in the season. And I just wanted to get him on the record too.
Hey, always good to have options because, you know, as we talk about more of these players, as drafts get closer and closer to the end of March, you know, you're going to find yourself with a queue of like two or three of these guys, and you're going to start seeing them leave your queue. And it's not going to be you picking them. So it's good to have those kind of late options because you can't draft all of them. Like, right. In most formats, your roster won't allow it. And so good to kind of be like, oh, if I don't get Miranda, then I'll look at Trulio or, you know, if I don't get Durant, then I'll look at the other two or whatever order you want to put them in. All right. Let's go into some pitching. We got two pitching categories here. Michael, lead us off here with a starting pitcher that doesn't have a job. So he might have a job on the opening day roster, but it won't be in the rotation, or it possibly won't be in the rotation. Again, ADP past 300 in online championships. Who might you be targeting that fits the bill?
Well, this is what I'm talking about. I get stuck on Minnesota, but it really makes all the sense. Before we even did the concept of this document and this show we're doing, an excellent show on the wire, by the way, I ended up, Louis Varland is a guy. I love Louis Varland. I love his stuff. He gave us a nice audition last year. And for some reason, it looks like people are saying it's Chris Paddock and Anthony DeSclafani over him. I'm not buying that. So maybe there's others who are saying, well, no, Varland's going to be in. But even if Varland's out temporarily, I assure you, Paddock or DeSclafani will get hurt. Mark it down now. Book it. I don't want him to get hurt. It's just the way life goes for those guys, okay? I didn't invent the game. I'm just playing it. So I love Louis Varland's game. He's got nasty stuff. He can give you a solid caper nine from a starter in a good ballpark to pitch out of from home base at Target Field for Minnesota Twins. Louis Varland. I'm stuck on the Twins, but I love it. I think he's a guy that I would love to grab, and I wouldn't regret it at all.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing it in a league with me, you're not getting them past 300. So I'll tell you that much. And Di Scalfani already got hurt.
I was going to say, so you're no absolutely right. Coming from this show, right?
Yeah. Oh, crap. Did it happen? Okay. Yep. There you go. So
yeah, I'm 110% on board the Louis Varland train. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm the conductor, but I'm definitely on board, and I'm very much so comfortable.
I'll let you sit next to me. I won't be like in Forrest Gump. Can't sit here. You sit right next to me. I'll make it nice and warm for you.
We'll run together. There we go. Kevin, besides Louis Varland, then post 300 starter that might not have a job, doesn't have a job, whatever. Who might you be looking at if you've got the extra pick?
Oh, he definitely does not have a job yet at this point, unless something's going on we haven't heard about yet. But we talked about Ben Brown of the Chicago Cubs quite a bit towards the end of last season. And he had been missing some time due to injury. And I think if not for those injuries and missing that little bit of time, I fully believe we'd have seen him at the end of last season, and we would see him in the starting rotation to start 2024. He's not there, but the Cubs rotation, not the greatest in the world. But, you know, Justin Steele, great. Jameson Taillon, I think many believe, I am one of the many that believe he'll bounce back, have a at least decent season for the Cubs. They got Imanaga in the offseason, Kyle Hendricks, and then we're looking at Jordan Wicks, who some people like, and then I think Cade Horton should be coming up soon as well, kind of him or Ben Brown. I think Ben Brown can pitch his way to back to the top of the next guy up list for the Chicago Cubs, and that we'll see him fairly early in 2024.
Yeah, you gotta remember Ben Brown on the 40-man. He's in spring training right now. Cade Horton did not get an invitation. And, you know, a lot of, you know, some people were worried about that. Some people kind of understood it more of like keeping him more stretched out in spring, in minor league camp, rather than kind of being spotty in, you know, having to fight for time at the major league camp. So there's definitely two ways of thinking about, you know, Cade Horton and where he's going to go. But I agree. I think we'll see Horton up early in the first half of the season. And I think personally, Horton has a better shot of like doing what like Bob Miller did and like taking the job and running with it, rather than, or like what Tanner Bibee did in Cleveland last year, than maybe Ben Brown might get an earlier shot at it. I wonder how much Ben Brown what kind of ability he will have to, you know, run with the job if given the opportunity, or if it'll turn into more like spot starts here or there.
He was sent to AAA on Friday, Adam, along with Pete Crow Armstrong. So it's not one that worries me at all. It's like, okay, yes, these are the guys. We know they'll be coming soon, but today's the day. We're sending them to AAA camp. So I'm not too worried about that, but he did get sent to AAA on Friday.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, this is the time we start seeing all those notes, right? It's like, it's like those are the news items that we start seeing come through. This team sent X, Y, and Z down to Eric. Are you looking through it? You're like, oh, they're my guy that I really want to make sure he stays in camp. Did he get? No, he's still okay. Wyatt Linkford still has a chance. Jackson Merrill still has a chance. Until finally, like the day before, you know, opening day, all of a sudden, all the rest go down, and you have to, all your dreams go down with it.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes, please.
I just want to. I'm the guest here, so I'm going to exploit my guest privileges. There's just a couple other guys I want to mention real quick, and that's, you know, Ronzi Contreras. I'm not giving up on Ronzi yet. He's not penciled in the rotation right now for Pittsburgh, but I still like his game. I'm hoping that maybe he can get back in the mix. And also for my Tigers, Casey Mize, he's back and he's looked all right. He's not penciled in the rotation either right now, but he's a guy that there will be an opportunity here. I'm sure of that. I feel pretty confident. And he's made some adjustments and he increased some of the break on his breaking ball and compares that to his fastball. It's created a nastier situation for him pitch-wise. So just a couple other guys to think about along the way.
I like that Mize shout out. I'm going to echo what I said earlier. Watch out for Ronzi because he's got Eric Lauer to compete with now in Pittsburgh. So that rotation spot might be, you know, called for. All right, let's move out of the rotation for our final category. Move into the bullpen, guys. Kevin, start us off here with a closer in waiting relief pitcher who doesn't necessarily have a job, but, you know, could find their way into some saves and or an actual closing position come, you know, early as the end of April. We see these jobs kind of start turning around as early as like the end of the first month. So it could possibly see that in a couple places this year as well. So again, ADP past 300 in online championships. Who you got?
Yeah. We talk about him a lot all the time, through over the years, whether we're talking about him in the off season or as a, on the wire candidate in season, but Aroldis Chapman may have an opportunity in Pittsburgh. We saw Bednar have issues late in the 2023 season, having issues in the spring. The contract Aroldis Chapman got, I think he got like $10.5 million, where he got $2 or $3 million from the Royals last season, has some speculating that the Pirates did this not as a flip at the deadline for prospects, as most of us probably thought was the case when they signed him, but maybe they had some inclination they were going to need him in that role. At this spot, he's only been drafted in half of the online championships that have taken place over the past 2 weeks. So he's available very late, as close to free as you can get. Worth a shot right now. He may have the job very early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that contract that you mentioned is going to make it more difficult to get a Cole Reagans type of return at the deadline. So you might have something there as far as like what the Pirates' intentions actually were with bringing him on board. Michael, we got a couple of closers in waiting, really good relievers that could walk themselves into a closing situation. Who might you be looking at?
Well, to me, what Kyle Finnegan did for the Nationals last year, it's like a miracle. It's incredible. How did it happen? How did he do that magic he did? And he had some stupid ratios early on, and he was still grinding out saves. It was just a bizarre, bizarre closer season. One for the ages, I might argue. But, there's the but. Hunter Harvey, that's the guy. That's the guy I want. Hunter Harvey has the better stuff in terms of your classic closer. He can strike people out. He did have his first 10 saves of his career last year, finally. You know, Hunter Harvey, for those that don't remember, Baltimore Orioles prospect, long time ago. Seems like he's 35 years old now, but he's not. He's been around for sure and had a lot of injury issues. But it's never too late to be the best version of yourself. And that's something I've always preached, and I know personally, and I know that Hunter Harvey feels the same way. So I like Hunter Harvey a lot to eventually usurp that role from Finnegan. Finnegan can't just do it again. I just can't buy it that he could be the same guy and still get the same results. And then as a deep shot, what the hell, why not? Abner Uribe of the Brewers. Really nasty stuff. I know Devin Williams is entrenched in Milwaukee, but it's worth mentioning that Uribe's stuff is filthy, and he's got a lot of potential. So just a name to throw out there as the season goes on. Maybe he'll show up. At the very least, he's an excellent guy to have as a bullpen guy if you're in K-9 or Souls Leagues.
Yeah, I think Uribe is going to be somebody, Kevin, that we talk about quite a bit in our reliever section of our FAB recommendations. The only reason I like Harvey is that we talk about this all the time. It's like a reliever or a closer on a bad team can still be very valuable if he's the closer. And yeah. I think that I think Finnegan is the closer to start the season, but I don't think it's going to turn into some kind of committee between Finnegan and Harvey. Either Finnegan loses the job, Harvey takes it. Finnegan gets hurt, Harvey takes it, or Finnegan holds on to it and then, you know, Harvey doesn't take it. And I think it's going to be very clear cut in that scenario, making Harvey that much more valuable. So I'd like to call out here for sure. All right. Those are our categories that we're talking about in the wild card. We will talk about plenty of wild card options throughout the course of the season. But before we head out of here, Kevin, final thoughts on whether anything we talked about today or anything else that you have as far as advice for anybody out there that hasn't drafted yet, is in the middle of drafting, is looking to draft their 30th draft as we get closer and closer to the end of the month?
Well, it's you know, we love to overreact this time of year, all of us, and we all do it. Even those of us that say not to, we still do it some. We always do. It's just a human tendency. We have biases. This happens. But you know, a perfect example. I was listening to a guy most people have probably heard of named Nick Pollock on Bench with Bubba this week. And he was talking about Kevin Gausman, for example. This is just an example, right? Everybody sees shoulder injury and they go running, and we're not drafting Kevin Gausman. Right? He starts dropping. Well, before Friday's news came out that Kevin Gausman himself said he's ready for opening day, right? Nick Pollock was already saying, you don't just look that it's a shoulder injury and freak out. You got to look at the type. He said, it's not in the capsule. It's like, it's not structural. It's sore. He's got a sore shoulder. He tried to ramp up too quickly. It got sore. He laid off of it for a couple of days. He's fine now. Right. So it's just a perfect example of the overreaction, because I just drafted Kevin Gausman at the end of the third round of a 15 team league. That was not a possibility all of draft season until this news, and there's nothing wrong with him. So dig into all the news. I mean, yes, like I said, we all overreact. It's really hard not to try to do as little of it as possible. Go look in for a little more news. We have a lot of drafts coming up, most of us, right, over the next 3 weeks, especially the final two weekends. We're going to have even more of this news to dig through. Adam, bring it up all the time, mining the news, check that, check there's, you know, actually read the article, not just the headlines, right? And check on some of these things because it can help you without even you realizing that you're like pulling back on that overreaction.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of chatter right now, obviously, on the Twitter talking about, you know, how much are you overreacting just to spring training stats? Never mind the news, underlining news that is coming out. So, yeah, I like, let's tamper it down just a little bit, get all the information you can, and then make an informed, educated decision rather than, you know, the best advice I think you just said was read the article, not just the headline. I do that all the time. So I feel like you were talking to me, but that's okay. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. This was absolutely amazing. A pleasure and honor. Give everybody a good shout out as to, you know, what you got going on as the end of the season, at the end of the off season or spring training rolls on, as far as like, do you have any plans? Are you going to put out another video? Are you going to write another song? You know, what do you got in the works?
What's he going to do next, folks? People are dying to know. No, look, I did round three of our fantasy draft prep, 2024 fantasy baseball draft prep. We've done three parts there. Today's episode was 2 hours long. So if you want more draft prep, head over to Palazzo Podcast, 2 L's, 2 Z's in the YouTube version. Subscribe, like the videos, blah, blah, blah. Or listen in the audio version. Give us a 5-star review. It'd be great. Otherwise, I will be continuing to do what I'm doing. I'm working on more player battles. I got this segment we're doing called Two Little Mice, which is from a great movie called Catch Me If You Can, where Christopher Walken talks about two little mice climbing out a bucket of cream. And mm-hmm. I put two hitters or two pitchers together. We're talking draft battles here. I did last night, Michael Harris versus Luis Robert. So that was an interesting one. So we're doing all kinds of stuff like that over there on the YouTube. Quick videos, get you prepped for 2024. Full season go. Discord's free. Patreon if you want it. You can find all of it at MJ Govier on Twitter or Palazzo Podcast, 2 L's, 2 Z's. I love the show and I love doing it with Kevin, Adam. Thanks guys for having me on, man. It was fun. I love talking baseball.
And if you are actually, looking...
I have to tell you, when I typed in Jackson Merrill onto the outline earlier today, I first of all had to look up to make sure I was spelling it correctly, and I was like, 2 R's, 2 L's, just like Palazzo Podcast. That's what went through my head as I was typing.
It's catchy. It's easy. Thanks, brother. I appreciate that, man. You're the best, Kev.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a intro into NFBC draft and holds, Palazzo Podcast, listener leagues, join that. $50. You filled the fourth league, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. What a terrible host slash like pusher of content I am. You're right. We got four full leagues.
Yes.
And now we're looking to fill League 5, which I'm still not in this thing because I live in Michigan. I need to get in. Man. I want to be in. But it's just so stupid, these rules of technicalities. You can gamble all day long here in Michigan. We got, you know, DraftKings all day long. But I can't play a $50 season-long fantasy league? It makes no sense. So please sign up. We'd love to have you. We'll fill it till opening day. I'm glad you brought it up. Also, two-hour slow draft. So if it's not something you have to be there for in one sitting. 50 rounds, two-hour slow draft clock.
Yeah, I finished up League 2 ago, the other day. It was great.
2 years ago, I won my league of the Palazzo Listener Leagues, but the guy that finished second in my league won the overall. So
I love it when that happens.
You know, we talked about how that can happen. I've seen it happen. I know it can.
That's right, dude. Yeah, it did happen to you. Man, you should be enshrined as one of the overall winners. Yancey Eaton, fellow fantasy baseball lover, is a two-time overall runner-up in the Palazzo Podcast Invitational. Last year, we had 90 teams, 6 leagues. We're hoping to crack 7 leagues and crack 100 this year. So sign up, $50, nice. No problem. No in-season management, even though this show's all about in-season management.
Got to set your lineups. Got to set your lineups.
Yeah, you do have to set your lineups, yeah.
Yeah, Yancey ended up being co-champion of our listener league overall last really? Year. He won it on the last day because of that Miami Mets game that got rained out in the eighth inning, and they decided to just call it after the eighth. And because all those stats went in after the final day, he got bumped up like a point and a half, and he ended up.
I remember that now. Yeah, that was a big whoop to do. Yeah,
that good made a difference somewhere. And there you go. Yancey was the beneficiary of that. All right. Well, that is going to wrap it up for episode 154 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hastings Kevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. I'd like to once again thank our guest Michael Govier for joining us this week. Follow them at MJ Govier on the Twitter. And after all that, I am Adam Howe. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.